नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
सर्वधर्मान् परित्यज्य मामेकं शरणं व्रज। अहं त्वां सर्वपापेभ्यो मोक्षयिष्यामि मा शुचः। Translation: Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Purport: The Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Supersoul, knowledge of the different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. He has described in so many ways different types of religion. Now, in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. In the 8th chapter, it was said that only one who has become free from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus, one may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically free. There is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities. With faith and love, one should surrender unto him. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in the Hari Bhakti Vilasa. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam rakshishyatiti vishvaso guptridve varanam tatha atmanikshepa karapanye shardavidha sharanagatihi. According to the devotional process, one should simply accept such religious principles that will lead ultimately to the devotional service of the Lord. One may perform a particular occupational duty according to his position in the social order, but if by executing his duty one does not come to the point of Krishna consciousness, all his activities are in vain. Anything that does not lead to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness should be avoided. One should be confident that in all circumstances Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There is no need of thinking how one should keep the body and soul together. Krishna will see to them. One should always think himself helpless and should consider Krishna the only basis for his progress in life. As soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service to the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, at once he becomes free from all contamination of material nature. There are different processes of religion and purificatory processes by cultivation of knowledge, meditation in the mystic yoga system, etc. But one who surrenders unto Krishna does not have to execute so many methods. That simple surrender unto Krishna will save him from unnecessarily wasting time. One can thus make all progress at once and be freed from all sinful reactions. One should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he is all attractive. One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists. Some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman vision. Some of them are attracted by the supersoul feature, etc. But one who is attracted to the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and above all, one who is attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna himself, is the most perfect transcendentalist. In other words, devotional service to Krishna in full Krishna consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Karma yogis, empiric philosophers, mystics, and devotees are all called transcendentalists, but one who is a pure devotee is the best of all. The particular words used here, ma shuchaha, don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry, are very significant. One may be perplexed as to how one can give up all kinds of religious forms and simply surrender unto Krishna, but such worry is useless. This is a well-known verse from Bhagavad Gita. Among those who do know the Bhagavad Gita, not many verses, not many people know many verses from Bhagavad Gita. Mostly in India, if anyone knows, they know yada yada hi dharmasya paritranaya sadhunam, and maybe the first line kamanyaivadikaraste, and then, well, usually they just know the first line. You have a right to work, and they think it means you have a right to work like a donkey. Among Srila Prabhupada's followers, this verse is very well known because Srila Prabhupada spoke it so often, he emphasized it so much. Because, as he states here, it is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. It's the last instruction in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. It's known as the Charam Shloka, which means the topmost verse, or the supreme Charam Upadesh, the supreme instruction. It's quite astonishing if we consider that the same Krishna who says that yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam sujamyaham paritranaya sadhuram vinashaya chatushkutam dharmasansthapanataya sambhavami yuga yuga. The same Krishna who says that whenever there is dharma glani, a decline in religion or dharma, dharma, religion, whatever, dharma, better use the word dharma. Translation is their religion, but it's not a very satisfactory translation. Prabhupada often said that religion means a kind of faith, that's the dictionary definition. But dharma has a much bigger meaning. So the same Krishna says that whenever there is a decline in dharma and an increase in adharma, adharma is the opposite of dharma, irreligion, we can say. Lord Krishna says that I come myself in every age to protect the sadhus and to destroy the dushkritis, the rascals, and specifically to re-establish dharma, I come. So the same Krishna who comes specifically for the purpose, as he states, of upholding, protecting, and re-establishing dharma, here gives us his final and topmost instruction to abandon all varieties of dharma. Parityaja, just completely. Sarva dharman, all dharmas. Parityaja, completely. It's a completely, every single one of them, completely reject. And then Maam ekam sharanam raja. And take shelter of me fully. So, very simply, this is understood that whatever Krishna has described previously, various processes, they are all, that means karma, jnana, yoga, they're all incomplete and imperfect, and the only really reliable process for attaining the perfection of life is this, to surrender to Krishna in bhakti. Now, I was saying that the translation of dharma as religion, it's not a very satisfactory translation. Prabhupada uses the word religion because there is no real word in English that is the translation of dharma, that carries the concepts of dharma. Even the concept of dharma it's not there in the whole Western culture. It's a missing word. Now the word dharma has entered the English language. But there's not really much understanding of what it means. Let's try to understand this, because if Krishna is asking us to, if he comes in every age to establish dharma, it's got to be something important. And if he asks us to give up all dharmas and surrender to him, then we should know what those dharmas are. Otherwise, how can we give them up? So what is dharma? Well, it's not only in the West that there's not a very clear conception of it, but even over the centuries among acharyas or the various philosophers and practitioners of various strains of dharma, they have all given somewhat differing definitions. It's something like the mind. If you say the mind, everyone knows what you're talking about. They have some idea what you're talking about. But if you try to define it exactly, it becomes a very difficult job. And even the experts, those who spend their whole life studying the mind, even they may have differing opinions as to what dharma is. That's one of the famous yaksha prashnas, that when Lord Yamaraj, otherwise known as Dharmaraj, in the form of a yaksha, asked his son, Yudhishthira, who didn't know that he was being questioned by his father, the yaksha, or Yamaraj in the form of a yaksha, put so many questions to Yudhishthira. That's the Yaksha Prashna section of Mahabharata. So the question, what is dharma? Yudhishthira Maharaj gave the answer. He didn't give a definitive answer, but he didn't completely define it. But he said where to find it. The answer, tarko pratishta shutiyo vibhinna nasa vishya yasya matam nabhinnam dharmasya tatvang nihitam guhayam mahajana yena natasapanta. Dharma, this is the subject matter of discussion among various philosophers, various rishis, or sages have given their opinions on what is dharma. And even in various parts of the Shruti or the Veda, there are apparently contradictory definitions of dharma. Makes it confusing, doesn't it? So He says that, well, simply by, Yudhishthira Maharaj replied that simply by discussion and argumentation, it cannot be understood. Tarka apratishta. It cannot be, what is dharma cannot be established simply by argumentation. And shrutayo vibhinnaha. The scriptures say different things. And one cannot be considered a philosopher unless he has a different opinion to everyone else. It's true then and it's true now. So, how can we find out what is dharma? He says that those who are great personalities, they understand what is dharma. The truth of dharma rests in their heart. Therefore, to understand dharma, one should follow the path chalked out by the Mahajans, or great personalities. So then the question comes, well, who's a Mahajan? And according to one's outlook, one may accept different kinds of persons as a Mahajan. Shraddhara yo yang purusha yo yas chadhasa eva saha. Everyone has a different kind of faith or outlook. And according to one's outlook, according to what one values, one will perceive the leaders in that field as being Mahajans or great persons. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in commenting, who is a Mahajan, who is a great person, he says that, well, for Rakshasas, Ravan is a Mahajan. For demons, Hiranyakashipu is a Mahajan. And Srila Prabhupada updated the purport and said that for those who are enamored by science, Einstein is a Mahajan. So, as far as demons are concerned, Ravana, he's a great person. In South India, even now, there are demons who think that Ravana is great and they don't like Ram. They defend the position of Ravana. So, who do you consider great? Among sports fans, the sports heroes are Mahajans. I have absolutely no idea who the great sports heroes in America are. I heard the name of Magic Johnson, but did he die yet? I heard he was had AIDS. Or, did he die? Huh? Still alive. His life even with AIDS. Or he's HIV positive or something. I don't know. So he's something from the gone generation. So in India, the film stars, they are considered great persons. And sports stars also, the foolishness of sports cultures there in India, but there they play cricket, which is, works on the same kind of principle as baseball. You throw a ball and hit it with a piece of wood and run like anything. And that's it. And they try to throw it back to the base and another silly game which they spend far too much money on. So, who is a Mahajan? There are different Mahajans, but later on, even before that, Yamaraj, we find himself giving a definition of who are the Mahajans. There are many Mahajans, but he gives a list of 12 who are Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapilo, Manu, Prahlada, Janaka, Bhishma, Baliya, Vyasakya, Vayam. So there's 11 names, plus myself. I'm also a Mahajan. Just like Prabhupada once, someone was saying to him that, oh Swamiji, it's so difficult to find a real guru. Prabhupada said, I'm a real guru. Not so difficult. I'm here. So, Yamaraj, he's also. So, they all have the same opinion. The same question that Yamaraj's followers, the Yamadutas, they wanted to know that, well, what is dharma? What's going on here? This Ajamil, he's simply a rascal. He's so sinful. And just these Vishnu Dutas came and he was obviously quarry for us. He's an eligible person to be tied up and taken away and tortured by us. So how is it? What's going on that these people, these beautiful people came and prevented us from taking him? What is dharma? This man is obviously sinful, and according to dharma, he should be punished. But Yamaraj told them that there's a higher principle of dharma. That is known by the Mahajans. Dharma, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma is that which is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this dharma operates at various levels. There's worldly dharma. Here Lord Krishna is saying, giving up, this is to be understood as giving up all kinds of worldly dharma. Because when he says, Mame kam sharanam raja, to take shelter of me, that is Bhagavat dharma. So that's also dharma. But that is not to be given up. It's actually not possible to fully give up dharma. When Lord Krishna says to give up all dharma, this should be understood in context, because it's not possible to fully give up all dharma, because every person, every living being is inextricably connected with dharma. One is defined by one's dharma. Sugar looks like salt. Anyone ever had the experience of putting salt in the sweet? Looks the same. When you're in a hurry, you're trying to get the offering ready on time, you just throw in the, here it is, looks pretty fine, okay, never mind, put it in. And it's good for cows. They like salt. Salt cakes are good for cows, but not for Krishna. That's for Krishna's cows, but not for Krishna. So, sugar must be sweet. If sugar is not sweet, then it's not sugar. You can't, sugar and salt, you can't mix them up unless you're a Gujarati. Put sugar in everything. But even then, you have to put some salt in the dal and the chapatis and everything else. You can put sugar in and spices. Yeah. Chili. Ever tried putting chili powder in milk? Doesn't mix, does it? I mean, I never had it or even thought of it, but it wouldn't work. Chili has its hot. The smaller they are, the hotter they are. Watch out. So if it's not hot, then it's not a chili. It's when you're eating these beans. You have to watch out because the beans and the chilies look the same. So if there's a chili in there, you might think, well, you're just eating it as eating some bean sabji, and all of a sudden, you hit a chili. Chili means hot. It might look like a bean, but when it's cooked, they all look the same. But its inseparable quality is that it's hot. Sugar's inseparable quality is that it's sweet. If it's not sweet, it's not sugar. If a chili is not hot, it's not a chili. So, a living being, by his nature, his inseparable nature. He has consciousness. With consciousness comes desires. So these are all inseparable from the living being. The word dharma is translated with reference to its root, that which sustains, that which holds. So that which sustains one's existence, that is dharma. That which makes sugar, sugar is its sweetness. You can have brown sugar, white sugar. It doesn't matter. The color is not what makes it sugar. And if you can have fine powdered sugar, you can have sugar. What's the regular sugar called? Sugar?
Granulated
sugar. Thank you. You can have sugar crystals. You can melt down sugar and make this different kinds of sweets made out of sugar. It's only sugar. In Bengali, they're called batasha, with those flat round ones, and the small ones are called kadamdana, the small round. But it's only sugar. It's just in different shapes. So what's the defining characteristic? It's sweet. It comes in different shapes, forms, colors, but it's sugar. And if you have the same form, it looks the same, but it's not sweet, it's not sugar. So what is the defining characteristic of the living being? Now here Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, who represents all living beings. Through Arjuna, Krishna is speaking to all living beings. What is for their benefit? He says to give up all varieties of dharma, but the root dharma, or the basic dharma of every living being is, what is the prime characteristic, or the inseparable characteristic of every living being? Srila Prabhupada analyzed this as the tendency to serve, or the necessity to serve. Everyone has to serve. So that service in a pure form is directed toward Krishna. And in the contaminated form, we serve our family, our country, and as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, that if we don't have a family to serve, then we get a dog, or at least a budgerigar, and we serve them. So the service tendency is there. That is the... Now, in this material world, Ishvaraham maham bhogi, everyone is trying to become the controller and the enjoyer. And that is the cause of our suffering, of our disorientation. That we don't feel quite right. Whatever we do, we don't feel quite right. Even Hiranyakashipu could, it would seem, legitimately say, Ishvaraham maham bhogi, after taking over the whole, after conquering the whole universe. He appeared to be the controller of the universe and the enjoyer. But he was always discontent. He was always in an angry mood. Even he attained the position which every materialist or every conditioned soul is trying to attain, that of being the controller and the enjoyer. Because actually he could not be the controller or the enjoyer. It's foreign to his nature. So the attempt in this material world to be happy by controlling and enjoying always results in frustration. And the more that we try to control and enjoy, the more we are discontent. Because the further we are going away from our true nature, which is to be a servant
of Krishna. So that is the inseparable characteristic of the jiva. Jiva Swarupai Krishna Nitya Das. The characteristic, the very nature of every living being is to serve Krishna. But when we don't do that, then Haya Maya Das Kari Nana Abhilash. When we become the servant of Maya, then we have many, many different desires, except the desire to serve Krishna, which are all because of our distress, disorientation. Now I'm thinking I'm a human being, next I'm thinking I'm a cat or a dog. But we don't belong here at all. We don't belong in this condition. So, we all, dharma is not possible to give up. But all, when Lord Krishna says to give up all varieties of dharma, that means to give up all kinds of misconstrued dharmas. I am the husband of this woman. I am the wife of this husband. I am the father of these children. I am the citizen of this country. All these are to be given up, and one is to identify oneself only as the servant of Krishna. Now you may think, how can I give up all these designations? Because I'm in this situation. It may be temporary, but I am the husband of this woman, or I am the wife of this man. I am in this bodily situation, which I'm presently in, however temporarily it may be. I have to feed and clothe the body. Lord Krishna says, Mame kam sharanam raja, to surrender to him. That surrender means by service, by activity. So, even to do that activity, the body is required, and if we don't feed the body, and we say, well, I'm not the body, okay, well, then there's no need to feed it. And they don't feed it, and the body doesn't work properly. And the mind doesn't, even the mental functions don't work properly. So, even on the bodily level, to completely give up, to give up the deha dharma, or the need of the body, as long as we are conditioned in material existence, that's also not possible to give up. And along with the basic necessities of the body, food, clothing, shelter, there are also social necessities, emotional necessities. Lord Krishna, earlier in Bhagavad Gita, he says that even a man of knowledge acts according to his nature. So even if we know that I'm not the body, but still, because every living being has or is inseparable from his personality, then the tendency to work like that, in modern language, it's everyone has a psychophysical conditioning. So everyone tends to work like that. And even if one is completely pure, even if one is freed from all material conditioning, then one may transcend one's psychophysical conditioning. But then in the pure stage, that doesn't mean that we become devoid of all characteristics of any personality. Rather, our pure personality manifests, and every personality is different to everyone else. So we all have our, apart from our general or generic dharma of being an eternal servant of Krishna, we also have our own individual personal characteristics by which we can serve Krishna. And Krishna He is pleased with every living being who's serving Him in various different ways. Rasovai Saha, the Supreme Truth is rasa. The Supreme Truth is full of rasa. So that rasa that is produced out of different relationships. So we find that the Supreme Lord, He is Krishna. He is also Rama, and the personalities of Rama and Krishna in many ways seem to be quite different. And He is Vamana, and He is Narasimha, and He takes different forms and has different, apparently a different character in these different forms, and relates with different devotees who serve Him in those particular ways. Hanuman, we can't imagine Him in Brajalila. He'd be out of place in the Rasalila. And the gopis would be out of place in Ramlila. That's why in Dandakaranya there are so many rishis who were pure, and they were pure, perfect in the sadhana, and they were attracted to Lord Ram and to His beauty, and they wanted to serve Him in a manner in which they could appreciate His beauty. But He said, not this time. I'm coming again. You come and join me that time. So they became gopis. They saw Ram and appreciated His beauty, but they couldn't, in that form, they couldn't express that desire to serve Him in a manner that they could appreciate His beauty. So when Krishna came, then they came as gopis and served Him, appreciating His beauty. And Hanuman, he's not just any monkey, he's an Acharya also. He's a great Vaishnava. He knows philosophically what he's doing. And he says, Srinathe janaki nathe amheda paramatmani tatapi mama saravasvam rama kamala lochanaha. He says, I know that Srinath, Lord Narayana, the Lord of Lakshmi Devi, and Janakinath, Rama, the Lord and Master of Sita Devi, they are the same non-different Supreme Personality of Godhead. But nevertheless, my all in all is Rama, lotus-eyed Rama. My attraction is not to worship Lakshminath, but the Vaikunthanath, but my attraction is to worship the same Lord, but in this specific form. So even in the pure state, different devotees have different characteristics, and they serve the Lord, they see the Lord in different ways and serve Him in different ways. In Vrindavan, Krishna is served by Mother Yashoda and by the gopis. And Mother Yashoda, she doesn't know what's going on between the gopis and Krishna. She's oblivious to that. She can't imagine. For her, Krishna is always her little boy. So, even though the Vatsalya Ras and the Shringara Ras, the parental mood and the mood of a lover, they don't combine. To attempt to combine them is Rasabhas. It's like mixing chilies in the milk. Doesn't go, it's unpalatable. But Krishna, He is relishing relationships in the same Vrindavan, and even sometimes in the same setting. That Radharani, she's also very dear to Mother Yashoda. She comes and cooks for Krishna. And then when Krishna was holding up Giriraj Govardhan, he was simultaneously reciprocating with all his devotees in different rasas. So, the basic dharma of every living being, Savai Pum Samparo Dharma, Yato Bhaktira Dhokshati, Ahaitukiya Pratihata, Yayatma Supraseedati. The basic dharma of every living being is to render unalloyed devotional service to the transcendent Lord. That service is to be unmotivated and uninterrupted. And that will fully satisfy us. The dharma, another characteristic of the jiva, is that every jiva has the desire to be happy. Krishna is happy. We are part and parcel of Krishna. So, we also have the desire to be happy. So, the attempt to be happy without surrendering to Krishna will never be successful. We can be happy by stopping thinking about our own happiness and only thinking about Krishna's happiness. Atendriya priti vancha tare bale ka Krishnendriya priti icha dhare premana. The desire to satisfy one's own senses is called lust, which can never satisfy us. But the desire to satisfy Krishna's senses, that is called prem, pure love. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, prem avatar, the incarnation, for want of a better word. It's not a very good word, but it's the English translation of avatar. He is the incarnation of pure love, prem dharma. Vaishnav dharma means prem dharma, the dharma of pure love. So this is when Lord Krishna says to abandon all varieties of religion. It's not, as the Mayavadis would say, to become a consciousness less. Not just unconscious, but devoid of all, or just to have a vague consciousness. Aham Brahmasmi, Brahmasmi Aham. Aham Brahmasmi. Just, I am Brahma, but nothing beyond that. Or they have the idea that the single consciousness merges into the undifferentiated consciousness. So it's just pure consciousness. But pure consciousness, actual pure consciousness, this idea that the jnana and jnata, the knowledge, the object of knowledge and the knower, they all become one, it's foolish. Pure consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and myself as his servant. Now, dharma on the mundane platform is the whole subject of Mahabharata. This here in Bhagavad Gita, this Bhagavad Gita appears within Mahabharata. And the whole subject is Mahabharata is discussing the complexities of dharma. It's very difficult to understand exactly what is dharma. If the whole Vedic society is based on dharma, which is roughly translatable more as duty than religion in this context. The whole Vedic culture is based on Yudhishthira Maharaj. He's so much concerned that we have to do the proper thing. But to know what the proper thing to do is in any circumstance, it's difficult to understand. Because there are basic rules of dharma. But they can only give, the rules of dharma can only give general guidelines, which in most cases are applicable. But life is very complex, and you can never tell what's going to happen. So sometimes one rule may conflict with another. And here we go again. I'm going to tell the story of the... I told this so many times, but it's so relevant. It's the story of the truthful Brahmana. The Brahmana, this story is told in Mahabharata by Lord Krishna. The Brahmana who made the vow never to tell a lie throughout his life. He lived at the edge of a village. The village was adjoining the jungle. So one day as he was outside his home, a man came running up, looking terrified, saying that, "I'm carrying lots of money. There are some thugs chasing me. And do you know where I can hide?" He said, "You can hide in the jungle, just right there." So he went and hid, and a few minutes later, a bunch of thugs came up and said, we're a bunch of thugs and we're chasing a man with a lot of money. Do you know where he is?" "Yes, where is he?" "He's right over there in the jungle." So they went in there, killed him and took all his money. So the Brahmana upheld two religious principles. One, to maintain his vow, and the other one, never to tell a lie. And he maintained this throughout his life. And when he died, he went to hell. Because in that circumstance, even if he'd made a vow, he should have broken it. Even though a Brahmana is supposed to be truthful, he should have not been truthful in that circumstance. Because to protect a person, even by telling a lie, is more important than to be truthful. To be truthful in a manner which is going to harm others. Truth can be harmful if it's in the hands of the wrong people. Satyam bruyat. One should speak the truth. But to always speak the truth, there's an example. It may not be always advisable. So like this, it is a rule of dharma that satyam, that is the truth, one should be truthful. But that's not the principle of truth, that one should always state what one knows. That is a moral principle. But in this material world, moral principles, because it's a relative world, moral principles have to be defined according to relative situations. But the highest dharma is to satisfy, that's actual dharma, that's absolute dharma, which is true in all times, places and circumstances, is to act in a manner that is satisfying to Krishna. So that is satya. Krishna is the param satya, the supreme truth. So to act in a manner that is pleasing to him, that is always satya. And to act in a manner that is not pleasing to him, even if it is apparently good according to world or following worldly karma, that is not satya. We find the well-known story of how Lord Krishna requested Yudhishthira Maharaj to tell, to shout out within the hearing of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama is dead. Because Ashwatthama was the son of Dronacharya. And before the battle, when they're all lined up, after Bhagavad Gita was spoken, Yudhishthira Maharaj, he got down from his chariot and walked over to the enemy armies and bowed down to his gurus, Bhishma, Drona, Pramukhata. He bowed down to them and asked for their blessings. Asked for their blessings that we can fight with you and kill you. You have to, whatever you do, you have to take blessings from your guru. So They ask blessings from Drona and said, yeah, he said, yes, it's good you came and requested blessings. If you hadn't done so, you would have had no hope. Without our blessings, you can't do anything. You would have been definitely destroyed. So then he asked blessings, and he asked his gurus very humbly that how can we kill you? Because that's what they were there for. Unusual circumstance. That was Arjuna's whole dilemma. Guru nahatva hi mahanava shriyo bhoktam. What is that? Shriyo bhoktam? Vaikshama piha loke. That we are here lined up to kill our gurus for the sake of enjoying the world. That doesn't seem to be dharma. To fight with your guru so that you can enjoy, that doesn't seem to be dharma. So Arjuna was in a dharma sankata, or he was in a dilemma. He didn't know what to do. So anyway, Drona told that, well, there's only one way you can kill me, that if Ashwatthama, my son, is killed, then out of disappointment, I lose all interest in living. Then you can easily kill me. Otherwise, you won't be able to kill me. I'm too good a fighter for all of you. It's not possible. So he went to Ashwatthama, asked his blessing, and asked, how can we kill you? And he said, you can't. Forget it. You're not going to kill me. At the end of this battle, I'm going to be alive. Which he was, and he's still alive. So, Drona, after the fall of Bhishma, Drona was causing so much havoc in the Pandava forces that Krishna thought, we've got to kill him. He's too much. So, how can we kill him? Only if Ashwatthama is killed. How can we kill Ashwatthama? We can't. So then we have to, okay, Yudhishthira, we have to fool Drona. So Yudhishthira, you call out that Ashwatthama is killed. And Yudhishthira said, well, why me? I never told a lie in my life. He said, that's why I'm telling you, because he won't believe anyone else. Because he knows you don't tell lies. Everyone else tells lies. Krishna tells. No one trusts Krishna. He's a politician. He's from Mathura. Mathura people are famous for telling lies. Even today. You can't trust them. Hope there's no one from Mathura here. But it's a known. It's a given. Can't trust anyone from Mathura. Including Krishna. So Yudhishthira, how can I do that? Okay. Krishna worked out a means. We have, in our army, one of the elephants is called Ashwatthama. So, okay, kill Ashwatthama the elephant. There's one more elephant killed unnecessarily to maintain Yudhishthira's morality. So, and then you call out Ashwatthama Hata. Ashwatthama is killed. And then I'm going to blow my conch, and then you can also say very quietly while I'm blowing the conch, Narova Kunjarova, maybe a man, maybe an elephant. So for your satisfaction, we can do it so you don't tell a lie, but our work is done. Drona is misled. So it was done, like this. And out of disappointment, Drona, he lost all his enthusiasm for fighting, and he was easily killed. And then after that, Yudhishthira Maharaj, whose chariot would, out of his piety, his chariot would not touch the ground. After that, it came down to the ground. Why? Because he told a lie, right? That's what everyone said. But people who don't understand think that because he told a lie, he lost his piety, and therefore his chariot came down to the ground. But the real reason is that because he hesitated to follow Krishna's order. That's why it came down. Otherwise, for following Krishna's order, it should have gone up further. But because he was reluctant to follow Krishna's order, therefore it came down. That's why we have to understand all the people who don't understand dharma, they misunderstand everything. Ekalavya. Why did Arjuna want his thumb? Why did he say Ekalavya Stam should be the greatest archer, better than Arjuna? So Arjuna was envious, it seems, and he Ekalavya, he was a hunter in the forest. And Dronacharya, he approached Drona that teach me bowmanship. And Drona refused. You're not fit. You're not Kshatriya. You're a forest jungle dweller. So you're not fit. So Ekalavya, not discouraged, made a clay form of Drona and worshipped that every day and practiced. And he became so expert that when the Pandavas entered, the broader Kauravas that were with Duryodhana and others, they entered the forest on a hunting trip with Drona. Drona wanted to see how the practical application. Okay, boys, you've been practicing. Now let's go in the forest and shoot a few lions and tigers. Let's see if you're up to it. So the hunting dogs were there, and then Arjuna, the hunting dog, he found that his mouth was completely shut up with arrows. So who has done this? This is a wonderful feat. Who can do that? He didn't kill the dog, but he shut up his mouth with arrows. Found it shut. Because the dog was barking at Ekalavya. So he came, and then it was revealed he had become such an expert bowman by worshipping the form of Drona. So Arjuna suggested to Drona that, well, he considers himself your disciple, so you should take dakshina, or the offering that a disciple has to give to a guru. So you take the dakshina, take his thumb. After that, he can't shoot properly. He'll never be as expert. So he took the thumb. It was gladly given by Ekalavya, and people think that Ekalavya, generally people think that Ekalavya is a great, he's the symbol of a great worshipper of Guru. And Arjuna was simply envious. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that Arjuna understood that actually this Ekalavya, why was he refused in the first place? He's not a Kshatriya. What is that? Caste consciousness? No, because he doesn't have the noble character that of a Kshatriya. And he has a, even though he appears to be a great devotee of his guru, but actually he has base motives. And that was later revealed when he joined he was still a good archer, although not as good as he was without his thumb. So he joined the Kauravas, and he was ultimately killed by Krishna in the great fight. So this was explained that Mahabharata is misunderstood in so many ways. All the shastras have to be explained by acharyas. So Mahabharata is full of all these complex situations. How are they resolved? According to the principles of dharma. And Yudhishthira Maharaj, Krishna wanted him on the throne so that he would rule according to dharma. Now, it wasn't that Duryodhana was completely bereft of dharma. He also knew the rules of dharma. Basically, he was ruling according to dharma. But because he was envious of Krishna, that even if one follows all the rules of dharma, but if he's envious of Krishna, then his following of dharma is useless. What's that verse? And in 11th canto of Bhagavatam, that Swadharma, that's summarized in the Chaitanya Charitam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Swakama Korite Rora Parimarjan. That even if one is following all the rules of dharma, but he's envious or neglects to worship Krishna, then all his following of dharma will simply send him to hell. the principle, the underlying principle of dharma should be to serve Krishna. Without that, one is sure to go to hell. Now, people follow dharma, what for? Generally, it's followed so that one can go to heaven, to swarga. But if you're dharmic, if you're moral and pious, dharma, that's the following of dharma, that is the basis of karma kanda and jnana kanda also. Even if one is seeking moksha, still he has to follow, everyone in Vedic society has to follow basic dharma. Even atato brahma jignasa, this atato, this is generally, now one should inquire into the nature of Brahman, the absolute truth. So this now, that is defined differently by different acharyas, is generally understood to mean that when one is fed up with the ordinary dharmic activities of trying to go to the heavenly planets, when one sees that this material world is simply a place of suffering, then he comes out of the purva mimamsa or karma kanda and comes to uttara mimamsa or jnana kanda and tries to understand the misery of this material world and become liberated from it. So even if one is on the jnana kanda, he understands the misery of this material world, still he has to follow basic rules of dharma which one has to follow. Now Arjuna, he considered, I don't want to fight, that is against dharma. We desire this world to rule over it for our own enjoyment, but Krishna told him to fight for the sake of dharma, for a higher dharma. Don't fight for your enjoyment, fight for my enjoyment. I want this. So Krishna brought him, Arjuna, to a higher platform, and then Arjuna fought, having agreed to give up all varieties of dharma. Arjuna fought, which is the dharma of a kshatriya, and Krishna told Arjuna that you cannot give up that nature. Everyone has their own nature. You can't give that up. You have to work. Even if you think, I don't like this, one has to work according to one's nature. One is forced to by one's own conditioning. Now Arjuna is not a conditioned soul, but he has his own personality which manifests as the perfect kshatriya. So all kshatriyas, they can follow the example of Arjuna. He's a pure devotee, but then pure devotees, we see, even in the spiritual world, some are, they have different roles. There's, in the spiritual world, there's Vasudev, who's a kshatriya, Yudhishthira, who's a kshatriya, but with much the nature of a brahmana. And we have the gopis, the gopas of Vrindavan, who are Kushigo Raksha Vanijam. Kushigo Raksha, they're mostly Go Raksha. They're concerned with cow protection. So that is the Vaishya, that is the nature of a Vaishya. So even in spiritual existence, one has one's own nature. And like I was saying, it's ridiculous to think of Hanuman in the Ras Leela. Or for that matter, you can't imagine the gopis also attacking Lanka. They're all pure devotees, but they have their specific roles to play. So this Varnashram system is there. Dharma, as described in the Mahabharata, to follow dharma basically means to follow one's Varnashram duty, which as Lord Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, by following this, one can gradually become purified. So a brahmana should act as a brahmana, a kshatriya should act as a kshatriya, vaishya should act as a vaishya, shudra should act as a shudra. Stri dharma, the wife assist the husband in the execution of his duties. So by doing this, one can be purified, and by doing this in Krishna consciousness, one can be fully purified. This Vanashramacharavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Aradhyate Panta Nanyat Tattosha Karanam. Vanashram, one should execute one's duties for the sake of worshipping Krishna. That's the beginning stage. There's another verse, I mean, in the Bhagavatam. Varnashram. Savaipung Sang Parodham. No. What is it? Varnashram Avibhaga Shaha. What's that verse? How does that begin? Dharmas Vanushti Vishwasanit. No, it is. Ah? What is it? Anyone? Svanushti Chasya Dharmasya Sang Siti Hari Toshanam. I got the three padas. What's the first line? Atapum Via Dvija Shreshta. Vanashrama Vibhagashaha. Svanushti Chasya Dharmasya Sang Siti Hari Toshanam. So, Vanashram duties, they should be executed, or the perfection of Vanashram is to perform these duties for the satisfaction of Hari. Now in the modern age we have no idea about what is dharma. But this Mahabharata, this has been, these Mahabharata, Ramayana and Srimad Bhagavatam, these three epics of three major literatures, they have been most influential in shaping the spiritual life of India over the centuries. So, what is dharma? That is very elaborately considered in Mahabharata and also in Ramayana. What is the param dharma, going beyond worldly dharma? That is considered in Srimad Bhagavatam. But going beyond worldly dharma, that does, as long as we're in this world, we have to do something. We have to live, we have to interact with the broader society. So here, this, what is this surrender to Krishna? Giving up all varieties of dharma. Mame kam sharanam raja, taking shelter fully in Krishna. That is sharanagati, or the path of surrender. What is that? Here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes, anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. One should accept all activities which are favorable for surrendering to Krishna and reject all those that are not. Now, this doesn't mean that one has to give up Varnashram completely. One may do, but one can only give up, it means to give up social interaction completely. That is possible if one becomes an avadhut, or one who is beyond all rules and regulations. He practically doesn't interact with the broader society in any normal manner. There are such persons. There in the Bhagavatam, we find the avadhut Tathātraya. But he was completely away from normal society. He was just lying down on the wayside, not doing any work, not going anywhere, just being self-realized, that's all. He didn't teach anyone. Well, he did eventually when Prahlad Maharaj came. But he wasn't making any endeavor to perform the duties of a brahmana by teaching others. He didn't bathe, which is a duty for everyone in Varnashram, to bathe daily. Vamsi does Babaji Maharaj in recent times. Gorky Shaw does Babaji Maharaj. They didn't interact with society. Vamsi does Babaji Maharaj especially. He practically didn't have any interaction with the world around him. There was no difference with him in day or night, or even in following Bhagavad Dharma or worshipping the Supreme Lord. He did so in a completely unconventional way. So that's not practical or recommended for most people. Most people, for a start, are not even on that level. Most people, if we tell that Savadhaman Paritya Jamame Kam Sharanam Raja, what does that mean practically for me? Well, be like Bhangshidas Babaji. Don't bathe, don't shave, don't eat, don't sleep, don't pass stool, and it's not possible for most people because you have the body and we have to maintain it. If we don't eat, then we don't have strength. So, to perform our duties, and if to eat, we have to do, unless we are completely surrendered to Krishna, we don't do anything, then we have to interact with others, and if we interact with others, that means we have to have some kind of social codes for doing so. So, it's not possible to fully give up all dharma in the sense that we give up social interaction, we give up eating, that's deha dharma. But the sense of performing any activity for any motive than to satisfy Krishna, that should be adopted. So Arjuna went on fighting. After agreeing to give up all varieties of religion and just surrender to Krishna, he surrendered to Krishna in a manner that from the external perspective might have seemed that he was just performing ordinary worldly duties. He was fighting as a Kshatriya. So it could have been that Arjuna's fighting was just for the sake of doing his worldly Kshatriya duty. But he didn't want to do that. He thought this ordinary duty, that's condemned because I have to fight against my guru. I don't want to do that. It's too much. It's sinful. But Krishna explained to Arjuna that even on the platform of worldly dharma, this should be done. It is possible. Even one can fight against one's own guru. It may be done. Under circumstances, ordinarily one would not even offer a verbal challenge to superiors. But it is possible, under certain circumstances, one may even fight his guru. And the example was there, one of the gurus that he didn't want to fight against, who was standing on the other army, was Bhishma, who himself had fought against his guru, Parashuram. So there is precedent for it. If that Bhishma himself said that Guru Api, even if one is a Guru, Guru Api Avalitasya Kaya Karya Majanataha Utpanna Pratipanyasya Parityago Vidhiyate. Same word, Parityag. It comes in here, Parityaja. So one, even if he's Guru, Guru is to be respected as good as God. Even if he's Guru, if later one understands he doesn't know how to teach properly, he himself is not following properly, if he's fallen from the proper position, he should be completely rejected. So Arjuna, Krishna said that it's justifiable even on the platform of worldly dharma to fight. But I don't want you to fight on that platform. Fight on the platform of surrender to me. So we cannot, as long as we're in this world, we cannot give up dharmas, we cannot give up varieties of activities and obligations, but everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. Lokiki vaiviki vapi yakriya kriyato mone hari sevan kulaiva sakayam bhakti michata. All activities, whether ordained by the Vedas or traditional customary usages or ordinary interactions, that should be done if it's favorable for Hari. Otherwise, for the service of Hari. Otherwise, a devotee, he doesn't follow Varnashram duties if they are contradictory to his duty of surrender to Krishna. So there are some thoughts about that. There's a lot more to be said, but I'm going to stop because it's getting a little late and you all have your duties, such as getting the kids to school in the morning. Yeah.
Why Karna was not accepted as a student of Dronacharya?
Why Karna was not accepted as a student of Dronacharya? Well, from the very beginning, he was inimical to the Pandavas. Drona didn't like that.
Yeah.
Well, the external reason is there. Well, he appeared on the scene at the you know the story. There was the after Drona had trained his students for some time, he wanted to show how competent they were. So an exhibition was arranged, and then Arjuna was shown as the star student, and all the elders of the Kauravas, they were very satisfied with Arjuna. And then all of a sudden, when it seemed it was all over, someone turns up. No one knows who he is. And he performs feats that at least match, if not outshine, those of Arjuna. So, but he was rejected because he's not a king. So then Duryodhana, who was always envious of the Pandavas, immediately said, okay, I'm making you a king.
But in childhood,
just a second. I almost finished what I'm saying. That immediately he became he became lined up with Duryodhana. The rivalry was there from their childhood. In childhood he was known as Radheya. He was known as Sut. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna, the Pandavas would always refer to him as Sutaputra, the son of a charioteer. They never accepted that he was on the level of a kshatriya. They always referred to him denigratingly as like that. So he was considered not fit. Generally, the son of a brahmana was accepted as a brahmana. That was generally so. There were many exceptions to that, but still, generally, one who is the son of a brahmana is accepted as a brahmana. Son of a kshatriya accepted as a kshatriya, because by the mentality of the mentality of the parents was understood. They attracted a suitable people who are following the principles of dharma. Whether Brahmana dharma or Kshatriya dharma, because they're piously following, they would attract to become a member of their family one, a soul who had also in a previous life acquired that mentality. So generally a Brahmana's son he is fit for being trained in brahminical duties. And Kshatriya's son was generally considered like that. And a low birth, that's called papa yoni. Low birth means they're unfit for the higher knowledge. That Sri Shudra Dvija Bandhu Nam Trayina Veda Gochara. The Sri women, Shudra, who Shudra are within the Varnashram, but at the lowest level. And the fallen descendants of the twice born, They're not fit for understanding the Veda. So similarly, one is Sutaputra, he's the son of a charioteer, then they're not fit for initiation into the dharma of a kshatriya. Because being a kshatriya is not just a matter of fighting. It's not, you know, you learn some martial arts. Anyone can do it. Well, not anyone. You have to have an inclination and for that and bodily, suitable body for that also. But, well, even in traditionally in the martial arts, because they originated in Varnashram culture, it wasn't that anyone was trained. One has to become a disciple, and one has to imbibe the good qualities of a kshatriya. The martial arts, they're never meant for aggression. So if one doesn't have the good quality of a kshatriya, he doesn't understand. If he doesn't have the quality of a kshatriya, that he's supposed to be selfless, to sacrifice his life for dharma, to uphold dharma. If one cow is killed or even beaten, the kshatriya is prepared to sacrifice his life to protect the cow. There are no kshatriyas in India or anywhere in the world today. If there are any kshatriyas, then there could not be cow slaughter. So that's his vow. It's the power that he has to conquer and rule over others that can be misused. So he has to be of suitable mentality. He has to be a suitable material to be trained as a kshatriya. Otherwise that knowledge can be misused. Modern ideas of democracy that no one should be given absolute power because they're afraid, because there are no people of noble character. And it's presumed that absolute power corrupts absolutely. But absolute power will only corrupt if the seed of corruption is in the heart. So those who are Vedic Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, they are only taught the higher knowledge when it's seen, they should only be accepted as a disciple when it's seen that the seed of corruption is not there in their heart. If it is, if they have a baser mentality, then they should not be taught this higher knowledge. They'll misuse it.
But in fact, did Karna show something that he had character?
He may not have done. And often it's thought that Karna is of good character. Datta Karna, he's very charitable. And often when we hear Mahabharata, people think they kind of sympathize for him. They empathize with him. But he's an example of someone who is in many ways good, but bad because he's against the devotees of Krishna for whatever reason. That is his fault. For whatever reason, by bad association or whatever, he was against the devotees of Krishna. And Krishna didn't like that. And Krishna is the ultimate arbitrator of dharma. And dharma means to satisfy Krishna. So even if, this is another lesson from Mahabharata, that even if one is good from the worldly perspective, if he's not inclined to serve Krishna, if one is even worse, against Krishna's devotees, then he's bad. He's not good. And we find that when Krishna told Arjuna to kill Karna when he was stuck, his chariot was stuck in the mud, and Karna protests, this is not dharma, then Krishna fired back at him, that where was your dharma when Draupadi was insulted? Where was your dharma when the Pandavas were sent to the forest unfairly? And he gave a whole list, and Karna had nothing to say. Krishna told Arjuna, kill him. So it wasn't according to dharma, worldly dharma. But if it's done for the satisfaction of Krishna, even if it's apparently immoral, That is the highest dharma. But one has to understand this very carefully. Otherwise, that principle can also be misused. I'm doing it for Krishna. I'm stealing for Krishna. Well, theoretically, you can do it. But if by doing so, you give the whole Krishna conscious movement a bad name, then that's not for Krishna. It works against Krishna's interests. Or if you think, well, I'm a devotee, so I can cheat others because I'm a devotee. To maintain my family, because I'm a devotee, I can lie and cheat and steal. That's a misunderstanding. So dharma has to be understood very carefully. Anything else before we finish here? Because I said I was going to finish. It's getting late. Yeah. That's why it's good to start early, isn't it? We started earlier. Yesterday you didn't start the lecture till nearly 8 o'clock. Yeah. How did Krishna kill? I can't remember, to tell you the truth. How did he kill Ekalavya? I don't recall either. It's only mentioned very briefly as one of the in Mahabharata. Yeah, Krishna himself. Krishna himself killed him, yeah. He killed him along with Jarasandha's forces. All right, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, well, now we got clarification. It's another fight. It's another fight. It's another fight. Okay, anything else? Yeah.
Just one question. Where is the confusion where the soul thinks that, how does he forget that serving the senses will satisfy him as a practicing the Where does he get illusion where he thinks, oh, if I serve my senses?
Well, it's a big question. I gave a long lecture on this a few days ago because it's a perennial question. It gets asked again and again. In brief, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Krishna bhuli se jivanadi bahimuk atev maya tari deya shamsar duk. Forgetting Krishna, the soul has become inimical to him since time immemorial, and therefore his maya, material energy,